You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Daddy's got a coke habit.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, comic book creator Felisa Markhorst. And now your host. He thinks if you want to guarantee you'll get laid on Halloween, dress up as the US government, because they're fucking everyone 24/7. Dees Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Dees. What is up, guys? Welcome back for another episode of the show. We appreciate you hanging out here on the Madness Entertainment Network. Guys, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff, as well as the new Roku channel. We have lots of great programming on the Madness Entertainment Network. All sorts of stuff, different shows. I'm working on some more stuff to put some content to put on there, some more comedy stuff, maybe putting a comedy special on there. So we're going to do all kinds of stuff. So keep an eye out on that. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend, spread the word, you know, spread the mirth a little bit. Let someone know where you heard it, how you heard it. Rate us, review us, all that good stuff. And also, real quickly, shameless plugs, guys. I will be at the Kings of Horror Halloween show tomorrow night, Thursday, the 30th. And then I will be at the Indie Comic Con in Houston Saturday and Sunday. And then I will be at the, I'll be doing some shows in Houston Saturday and Sunday with the Secret Group. So keep an eye on my Instagram page, dees.comedy, for locations. Excited to be working their events, their cool shows. So Houston, check it out. Come on out and support. Then I will be at the Kings of Horror convention in Schertz, Texas, the 8th and 9th. I will be doing some stand-up comedy the 13th of November at Castroville Barbecue in Castroville, Texas. Then the 15th, we're doing CASA, my favorite convention in San Antonio. And then I've got some more shows. I posted some dates on my calendar. Oh, the 16th, THC show at Upstage Comedy Lounge. That's going to be a cool show. You guys know what it is. Come out for that. Buy your tickets. We've got a promo code THC in checkout. You'll get 50% off your tickets. And then I'll be at Woodlawn Comedy Club on the 20th. I will be Bandera Brewing on December 6th, Ranger Creek Distillery. I've got a couple more dates through the end of the year, guys. Mostly local stuff. I'm trying to take it easy, not get on the road, because it has been a busy year. So I'm taking the last couple weeks of this year to just chill. I was talking to my uncle last night. He's like, your calendar does not look like you're taking the last 6 weeks of the year off. And I'm like, look, if I can go drive 10 minutes from my house, be gone for 2.5 hours and come home, sleep my own bed, that's essentially a day off, okay? So I count it. Buckets, count it. All right, that's it for the shameless plugs, guys. We are going to get into it with our, one more quick shameless plug, sorry. Kill Stand number 3 is coming very soon. We're getting the last pages wrapped up. Took a little longer than anticipated. The book's 32 pages, guys. It's a little thicker than the normal one, so it's just taking a little longer to get it all done, but it looks amazing. Can't wait to get it in your hands. If you haven't got reserved your copy already, you can at inferno.earth for Instagram or the website. You can buy pre-order it on our website, or just DM me and we'll figure it out. I accept Venmo, Cash App, Prussian Franks, Gold Bullion, Bitcoin, even food stamps right now, because shit's crazy out there. So get at me and we'll get you your physical copies real soon. But that is it, guys. Now we're going to get in it with our guest. She's been on the show before. She is the creator of the Sirens of Blood and Water comic book series. Please make some noise for Felisa Markhorst. Felisa, how you doing?
Hello. Yeah, I'm doing fine. I'm doing pretty great, actually.
Pretty great. Good, good. I love to hear it. So congratulations. You had a Kickstarter that funded very quickly for the book. Glad to hear it. That's always exciting when it can go so smoothly, right?
Yeah, I mean, we actually already got over 1,500 in 4 days.
Wow.
Yeah, which is really amazing because this is my first project ever, of course.
Yeah. So real quickly, for anyone who isn't familiar with the book, and we will drop a link in the show description, but give people a kind of elevator pitch about the project.
Sure. Okay, so my story is a fantasy story, and it's quite dark, actually. It's about sirens, and they are at the verge of going extinct. So they actually lost all their tritons, which means that they cannot breed with their own kind anymore. So only the ladies are still alive, and they need to find a way, you know, to save their species. So they use humans. But of course, like on land, things don't go as smoothly as they want to, because they run up into some trouble there because of the rules that are implied, you know, by the humans to save themselves, or actually, you know, protect themselves against what they call sea demons.
Yeah.
So there's a whole history behind it, but of course you're not going to learn that in issue one, because it's too big of a story, you know, to tell in just one issue. So there will be three. And the first issue is already, I think, 33 pages. So they will have quite, you know, like a good read for the first one.
Yeah.
And I already managed to sell over 200 copies of the book.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Even though it's just a pre-order.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what, you know, after, you know, we talked.
The dog.
Oh, sorry. Dogs are, got two dogs back here and there.
Oh, poor dog.
Go. Hold on a second. Sylvie, come here. Oh, I think it's time for you to take a nap.
Aww. Oh. Yeah, right. I have a dog too, and she's sleeping now.
Well, I have two of them, and they both try to sleep under my feet. Then they get mad at each other because there's not enough room.
Yeah, of course.
So, Roz, come here, bub. You're okay. Go lay down. This is what happens when you have this many dogs. We talked before you launched the book. You were a couple months out, still working on it. How was the process like, you know, now from wanting to do the book to like practical application of getting it done?
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually. You know, like at the beginning, it felt so slow.
Yeah.
Because of course I wanted to go way faster than we could, you know, because of course, like, I couldn't do anything. I just had the script, you know, and I needed other people to do the work. So I hired a comic artist and a color artist and a letterer, you know, all that stuff. So, of course, for me, it was a lot of waiting and then just checking, you know, like if it looks good, and then just tell them if I wanted any changes or whatever. And I try to, you know, like also give some creative freedom to my comic artist, because, you know, like I don't feel that it's good, you know, to take away someone's creative freedom. So sometimes I would just, you know, like give some sort of description, but then leave some things open up for interpretation, kind of like that.
Yeah.
So I think that also really helped. And at a certain point, you know, like at the beginning, I felt like I had to say, I had to give more changes because, you know, like we didn't like have that connection yet. But then after a few pages, we started getting like the hang of how to communicate with each other better. And then it went so smoothly, you know, like I hardly had to give any corrections at all.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, you know, when I got like all the pages, I found some mistakes. And it was like in the story, because in my story, like the men on land, they have marks and like tattoo marks. And those marks are actually to protect them against the sea demons. So they receive those marks when they get married. And at a certain point, like I told my artist, you know, like, okay, this man needs to be marked, this one, you know, like I told him. But then we started with page like 18 or something instead of one. And then, of course, like he already had the mark. But then when we created the first pages, he also drew the mark on there. But he shouldn't have it there because there was going to be a marriage, you know? And then at that point, when I was reading it, and I was so proud because the book was finished, you know? And then I let my friend read it, and she was like, "There's just one thing I don't understand. I don't understand like the thing about the marks." And I was like, "Yeah, but it's right there. You know, how can you not understand?" Then I saw that one whole page was missing in the book, and there were marks on his face, you know, where they weren't supposed to be. So I was like, "Oh, of course you don't understand," you know. And then I had to change the whole thing again with everyone, you know. So that was a little bit crazy. Because I went to an event, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to sell the book there. I just need to print it." And then I was like, "There are so many mistakes. Like, there's no way I can print it now." So of course I couldn't. So I only could ask people to pre-order my book. But I mean, just at that event, I was able to get over more than 40 pre-orders,
Yeah, that's
which
great.
is crazy because my stand looked so horrible. It was so ugly. I only had like a black and white paper version that I printed, you know, like out of a regular printer, there to show the people kind of like what the book looked like. And well, I mean, I had the two posters that I have, you know, for sh well up for display, and that was like the only thing I had. Oh yeah, and a few bookmarks. So it was kind of, you know, like I had this whole empty table with just, you know, like the posters that were really visible, and then that was kind of it. So it was actually really funny, but everyone was so understanding. They were all like, "Yeah, but you have to start somewhere, you know." And it looked really good, you know, even though you only have two posters, it just looks awesome. So, and then of course, like they could at least check like the black and white printed version, and they were like, "Oh, but the art's so beautiful. I really love how it looks," and blah blah blah. So then they were like, "Yeah, I really want to order the book." Yeah, so that was so awesome. I really didn't expect that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, I mean, if the story stands and, like, you know, it can stand on its own, people will be drawn to it and are willing to take a chance even if it's not done, you know. I mean, if you've got some concept art and kind of a proof of concept, they'll
Right.
they're definitely willing to jump on board. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that funny you say, like, mistakes and trying to figure out that workflow. And, you know, proofreading things, because it's so hard, because, you know, you're when you
Yeah,
create something
you're
like
so
that,
focused.
yeah, like, well, also, like, you know what's happening because you wrote it, right?
Yeah,
But
of course, yeah.
which can give you blind spots in the story, that
Right,
because
yeah,
you can
that's
fill in the
exactly
blanks,
it.
you know, but other people
Yeah.
can't.
Because you're focused on a different thing, you know, like you're just like, "Oh, the page is ready," you know, and then you only care about that. And then you're like, "Okay, on to the next." And then, like, you just want to work fast. And at a certain point, like, I think David created like 5 pages in a week for me, you
Oh,
know?
wow.
So, yeah, he worked really hard. But yeah, I mean, the book has like 33 pages, right? And now, of course, like we also had the character designs, and I created the posters and stuff. And then I also asked like different artists to also create something. So Romano Molinar, he also created like a mermaid poster for me and a cover. And Isaac Bell, who's f also famous in America, and Romano Molinar as well, by the way, and he's a Dutch artist. And Isaac Bell, he also created a cover for me, so the Not Safe for Work cover. And he also created a trading card. Yeah, so I'm really happy, you know, that they were willing to do that for me, because then of course, like I can also get more like different people who can see like my comic, because if they share my posts, you know, like it will also get to people who wouldn't like know me, because I have less followers than them, for example.
Right.
So then of course, like I have like more of an audience, so which is also really good. And you don't want to know, like Romano Molnar, he's crazy famous here in the Netherlands, and he's one of the most beloved creators. So which is why, because of that cover, you know, there were so many of his fans who were like, oh, I really love that you work together with Romano, you know, so I really want that cover.
Yeah,
so that's crazy. I even had one man and he ordered for over like 300 euros to pay for the original artwork. And he bought a poster, multiple books and everything, you know, like I was like, oh, that's so much. Wow. Like, how can you spend that much money?
Yeah.
But yeah, he was so gladly to do it. So glad to do it.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it is fun. Yeah, trying to figure out the, you know, the marketing and getting other people involved who can help promote the project and who are going to be an asset to it and stuff like that. And then, sounds like it all went together pretty well. What were some of the marketing things you did that you think really helped get the book across so quickly?
Yeah, you know, like, I've been thinking about that a lot over the past few days, because I apparently, you know, I did something right, because otherwise I would never have been able to sell that many books in such a short time.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, like, it feels like I didn't really do anything special, but I actually did, you know, because I did what a lot of people don't. But for me, it's normal. So like, for one thing, I talk a lot about my project, even if I meet new people, like if we have random conversation, then somehow I always manage to bring up that I created a comic, because I just love talking to people, you know, so it's easy for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. So the thing is that that's one of the things. And then the other one is I also went to all the events, but I've done it for years already. Like, it's not that I just did that now, because actually, this past year, I didn't really go to any conventions at all. So then, like, when I went there before, I always worked for other people. And those people had, like, a business or whatever, you know, like, and I was just flyering, handing out flyers and stuff. But then, of course, you talk to a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, I make friends easily. So I made lots of friends, you know, while flyering. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that build up actually helped a lot. And just, you know, talking to everyone whenever I was helping them, you know, buy new comics. And I mean, I also posted a lot, I think. Yeah. So I think that's kind of it, you know, like I did most of the standard stuff, but then it's also just me, you know, like being very sociable, I think.
Right. Yeah. It's just so interesting. I'm always curious to hear. And I know other artists are too, because it's like such a crapshoot on what is going to work and what isn't. There's no standard map to make it work. Social media is so bad. The algorithm so
true.
So not favorable to like independent artists and things like that.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So it's really,
I have the same problem, because I really don't feel like social media is really helping me a lot. You know, not as it should, because I still have some people who were like, yeah, I saw some things online, but I still don't understand how to buy your book.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, okay, so, but they just don't understand when they click on the link, like they have to enter like the name of my book, for example, or they don't understand how Kickstarter works. Maybe they don't have a credit card. Yeah. I don't know. But they're like, yeah, I really want to buy your book, but how can I buy it? And I'm just like, okay, you can just send me a message, you know, and then I will just fix it for you, because you can just order directly with me, you know, like, yeah. It's fine. So I mean, either way, you can just order it. And I actually got lots of pre-orders because of that too. Yeah, I think I got like over 20 just because I told people like they can order through me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you kind of have to create or, you know, eliminate any barrier to entry for people to get
True.
The book, you know.
Definitely.
And I mean, really, that's what we're trying to do is that I'm trying to build a network on my website. We have a shop on the website. And we're still doing Kickstarters, but I'm encouraging people to also pre-order through the website because ideally I'd like to get most of the people from Kickstarter just ordering directly from my website. That way Kickstarter isn't taking their 15%
right, their share. Yeah.
And, you know,
I understand that because like, that's a thing for me too. Some people, you know, like they donated on my Kickstarter and I'm so glad with that. You know, I'm so happy.
Yeah.
But I also gave the option to just, you know, order directly through me or to order on like a Dutch website that actually cooperates with me. Mm. So I did that because then at least, you know, I know that I will have like all of the profit because, of course, like I need the profit to work on issue two.
Yeah.
So for me, it's kind of like a big deal now because I also ordered a lot of books because I believe I can sell them. Because there were so many other people who were like, yeah, but aren't you scared to order that many books? You know, like you're buying way too many. What if you can't sell them? And I'm like, no, I'm going to sell them.
Yeah, yeah,
one way or another. You know, like I don't care if I have to go straight through, if I have to go over it or under it or like sideways. But either way, I'm going to sell these books. So I don't know how I'm going to do it. And maybe it will be a challenge, you know, but that's one I will gladly take on. Yeah, I'm just going to stores, you know, in my country. I'm just going to ask in the store, like, do you want to sell my book?
Yeah.
And then I'll sell it to them and then, they can sell it to the other people, you know?
I'm curious to know, because, I mean, being that you're based in the Netherlands, you know, and looking in this book, are you fulfilling the book or is someone else, do you have a distributor fulfilling the shipping for you?
Well, yeah. So right now I have one web shop who's willing to work with me. So then, we kind of made a deal, you know, for the first batch and then a second batch. So yeah, there's that. And then, he's helping me out that way. So that's a first step. But of course, like I need way more stores because like I can't rely on just one. So he's also going to help me find a distributor. So maybe I can, you know, like easily sell it to multiple stores. But yeah, I mean, I'm not scared to go out there and just, you know, like ask a random shop in my city or outside my city to just go there and ask like, oh, do you want to sell my book? Because I know it's a good book, you know, like, I mean, it looks good. Even if you just look at the art, even if you love mermaids and you look at the art, you know, like you're going to love it. So maybe the story is not for everyone because it's quite erotic. So especially the first issue, but it has a like deeper meaning. But then, of course, you need to read all the way up until issue three in order to find out why. Because I'm not going to give away all the secrets of the story yet, of course, like. I mean, there needs to be some mystery. There needs to be some questions that you want answered, you know, like in the next issue. So, you cannot tell like a full story in just one issue.
Yeah, yeah. You got to have a reason for them to come back, you know.
Sure. Yeah. So we can create more beautiful covers and more beautiful art.
That's right. That's
and that's such a well-kept secret, you know, that I'm going to reveal an issue too. And I hope it will be mind-blowing.
Yeah. Yeah. The secret is, the Avengers are going to be crossing over and they're all going to bang a bunch of mermaids and it's going to get crazy. Can't believe Marvel signed off on that, but hey, good for you. Like you said, the first issue is kind of erotic. There's obviously some spicy covers and stuff like that. How much does that play into the marketing, either for you or against you? You know, because I mean, obviously, like
it's so hard to tell because, you know, like I had my friend proofread it and she's a woman like me. And she loved it. She was like, oh, it's really good, you know. So she really liked it. But then I asked the man to read. And he was like, are you sure you wanted this naked? And I was like, yeah, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
But also, I think because, like, I mean, there is, like, one shot that's a little bit more explicit. But I actually think that it looks very passionate and it looks really decent and just, you know, like, I mean, it's a little bit playful, but it's not dirty, you know, yeah. Like, but that's my opinion, right? That's how I look at it. I actually think that David did an awesome job on creating a passionate scene that looks very, you know, like, artsy, erotic, kind of.
Sure.
But you still see a lot. So then the thing is that there's one scene.
You'll know it when you see it. You'll be like, that's the
yeah,
one.
Yeah, you'll know when you see it. Yeah. But like the other thing is that like there's like something visible that apparently Americans are a little bit scared of. And
do you see a butthole? So is that what? Is it a, what's going on? What do you
know? No, it's not. But yeah, like of course, like if you want to know, you have to read it. So then the thing is that I think he got a little bit, you know, like scared because of that, because he was like, yeah, I'm not sure, you know, like if that's a good idea. Maybe you should make a censored version. And I was like, yeah, but, you know, like, okay. So I was thinking about it and I actually wanted to create a censored cover. And I just said like, oh yeah, David, you can draw magical leaves in front of it. And then we started, you know, like making jokes about putting something on the cover, like no nut edition, something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the thing is that I didn't. And the reason why I didn't is because it would be so much more expensive. Like I already have 3 covers and those 3 covers are available in American Comic Edition. Soft cover edition and hardcover edition.
Mm-hmm.
So only, you know, like ordering those books already cost me over 3,000 euros.
Wow.
So it was really, really expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was more expensive than I thought it would be. Yeah. So I really made a mistake, rookie mistake on that department. You know, like I should have gone with A5 prints
yeah,
instead
yeah.
of so many covers. Yeah. So I think for the next, you know, like book, I'm going to create posters and A5 prints and stuff like that, you know, for the cover. For the book. So I can offer that, you know, as a gift instead of creating multiple books. Because the thing is that with the books, like, because they're so expensive now, because I can't order that many. Like if I could order 1,000 copies of the soft cover, for example, like the soft cover would be really cheap to buy. And then like, if I sell it, you know, like I didn't even have to make it that expensive. But
yeah.
Now, because I'm only ordering like maybe 100 or 150 or something like that, you know, like then of course, like it's more expensive. So the price for me to buy it, just one book, is already quite expensive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, that is one of the tough things, is like doing inventory and figuring out what you need and what to buy and where to invest. And once you
exactly,
get, you know,
yeah.
The harder, especially you have a couple covers, but also the hard part is going to be when you have more than one book out, then you've got to, you know, order 2. And yeah, it's a thing.
Yeah, because you also don't know which one's going to be more popular.
Yeah.
But actually, I looked at my list and I counted because I wanted to know, you know, like which cover would be more popular. And actually, all of them were equal.
Oh, really?
There was no favorite. So it just depends on where you go. Like if you go to an event with lots of Dutch people, then often you see that there are also lots of the Romano fans, you know, and they really want the Romano cover.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes you have like people who are quite new to the comic community or and they might like one of the other covers, for example, you know,
yeah.
Like it kind of depends. So, I mean, I don't know what it is, but it's just that, it's quite, you know, like on par with the amounts of covers I sold. like for all of them.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, keeping track of where things do well is smart. I've got a spreadsheet that every show I do, I keep track of how many books I sell and of what cover and things like that. And starting to break down like the demographics of those places and what covers are selling, so I can, you know, get a little
right.
better idea of,
yeah,
you know, like,
so at least you'll know.
Yeah. Like this one area I do around where I live, there's a lot of Hispanics and they seem to gravitate towards one particular cover of issue number one that I sell the most of to Hispanics, I found out. Like they just like that one a lot. Because it's like there's some angel iconography and Hispanics are generally very Catholic. So there's like,
yeah,
you know, so that right. At least that's what I'm assuming is kind of the draw. So
well,
it's just,
but it's also really funny, you know, if you think about it, that cultural, you know, like, well, cultural feelings and people might also, you know, like make them favor one cover over the other. So
oh, yeah.
Like what's famous in America, for example, wouldn't be in my country, or maybe in France, it would be even different, you know?
Right, right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I have to ask about the mermaid thing. So the story's about sirens, you say. Sirens, not mermaids.
Oh, yeah, but they're my version
yes.
of sirens.
Okay, so kind
yeah.
of like it's yeah, disambiguation. Now that, you know, your neighbors to the north, the Danes, are famous for a little tale called The Little Mermaid. What is the obsession with mermaids in your area? Is there like a cultural thing of that part of the world where like there's those sailors out there were just real extra lonely, or like what about it is it, because you know obviously that part of the world is where a lot of the tales of like that type of thing originated.
Yeah.
So what you know, is it like ingrained in the culture up there?
Well, I mean, in the Scandinavian countries, like especially Denmark, yes, because, well, you can see it in the culture because like they also have lots of mermaid statues there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know that, but there's actually a really famous topless one, but I forgot what city it was in because I can't remember that kind of stuff. But they also recreated like a replica in another city. And then the people asked for them to get rid of it because of the topless situation, you
yeah.
know. But then I'm like, but she's a mermaid. She's half animal. Animals don't go around, you know, like walking around in a bra or something,
yeah,
or shells
yeah.
on their boobies. So like that's also like the main reason why, you know, my mermaids are topless, because they're just one with nature. And
sure.
of course they enhance their beauty, but they don't hide it, you know. And they also don't need support in the water.
Yeah, it's a zero gravity situation. What are they worried
yeah,
about?
Yeah, exactly. yeah, and the mermaids age differently as well in my book. So kind of like you can't see them age and they can live for hundreds of years, you know?
Yeah, they just go hit those kelp baths, you know, and they've got it's that salt water is good for your pores.
Yeah, right. I mean, they remain beautiful throughout their whole life.
Yeah. So, I mean, is there like a lot of lore or like urban legends, local legends and tales about these sirens and mermaids of the sea in that region?
Well, yeah, of course we have some.
Like
and,
we have Bigfoot in America. Like we have like Sasquatch, you know, that's what we've got.
Right,
do you guys, you
yeah.
know,
well,
do you guys
we
have...
We also have like the Monster of Loch Ness. I don't know if you know that one.
Yeah.
That's in Scotland,
yeah.
for example.
Yeah.
So, yeah, of course there are many stories about, you know, mythological sea creatures and stuff. But the funny thing about mermaids is that some people also actually really believe that they have existed or that they still exist, you
sure.
know? So I think that's also quite special because some people also say and claim that there are skeletons that were found or maybe, I forgot what it's called. You know, when something's dried
like a fossil?
Yeah, a fossil. Yeah, that's one. So when the that there were fossils found of mermaids and stuff. So of course there are those stories too. And yeah, I think there are whole Facebook pages and that actually have information that claim.
Yeah. I mean, there's whole Facebook pages. There's whole Facebook pages about the Earth being flat. You know.
Oh,
so
exactly.
There's a lot.
So like for mermaids, that's a thing too. But if there's one thing, you know, that everyone who likes mermaids can agree upon, it's that they just look amazing. You know, like they're these amazing fantasy creatures because of their beauty and because of their voices. And that's also the funny thing, because like, of course, in a comic book, you can't really, you know, like portray the feeling of music.
Mm.
So, but I wanted to add it in the book anyway. So like, for example, they have moments where they sing together. There's party, like a party on the land after the wedding. And then like people are dancing and singing, you know, like around the campfire and stuff. And I created a magical fire. I didn't want regular fire, you know, like it's a fancy story, so it doesn't matter. I can do whatever I want, right? So I just told my color artist, like, please make the magical fire, like make the fire magical.
Yeah, whatever that means, make it magical.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it just looks so awesome because it still looks kind of natural, but it still looks so magical, you know? And so it's kind of like I wanted to add the elements of culture, of dance, of music, and still keep it in my comic. So because I was also inspired by music when I started creating my comic, you know, like I had some trouble, you know, actually going through with it, because, of course, it's a very scary project. I mean, I invested, I think, about 10,000 euros into this project, which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, you know, at a certain point when I started realizing that, I thought I had made the worst mistake of my life. I was like, what if I'm not going to
What have I done?
And I wanted to die. But then at a certain point, you know, like I got rid of that feeling and I was like, no, I'm going to sell them. I'm going to sell the hell out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And so the thing is that I also added like a QR code for the Sirens of Blood and Water song, so which is created by Epica, which is my favorite band. And because of their song, I thought of, you know, like using the name of that song for my book.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So like, yeah, there's some connection there. All right.
Yeah. So I also really wanted to have that QR code there so people can, you know, like, listen to the song and understand where my inspiration came from, and so they can enjoy like the feeling I had when creating it, and so they can also feel like the beauty of it, you know, and so they can understand the scene where they rise out of the water, you know, and then go on land, and so they understand like my whole vision when listening to that song. I also added like small details of some words that were in there, you know, or sentences or stuff like that.
I've always thought that it'd be great to have, and I've thought this since, I mean, for 30 years or more, where, and, you know, to now we could probably make it happen some way, but I've always thought it'd be great to be able to create like a soundtrack with a comic book, to where as you're reading along, like you open a page and it creates like,
exactly,
there's like a song that comes,
that's
up, you know.
That's actually what I wanted. But the thing is that I couldn't do it because I didn't know if it was kind of like legal to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I really spent hours and hours trying to find it out. I asked so many people, but I just couldn't get to the answer. So at a certain point, I also sent a message to management, you know, like of the band. But then they told me like I had to ask someone else, and I emailed that person like multiple times and I never got an answer. So then now I found out that that was probably not the right email. But then I'm like, okay, but then at least tell me you're not their manager, you know, so I know that I have to send the message to someone else.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like annoying because then I didn't know if I could do it or not. So, which is like the sole reason why I didn't do it, because like exactly that idea you had was like the one thing I wanted. And then the thing is that I chose to do it at the back of the story. So when the people finish reading it, you know, like they can just look at the pictures again while listening to the song if they want to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's at least something. But yeah, there's got to be a way to be able to attach. It's like you turn a page and it starts a song and then you go in there and like there's a way. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, sure. People there's always a way, but you just need to know how, you know, and then at a certain point, you just have to make choices because you can't, you know, like do everything by yourself. I mean, I don't have a publisher. I don't have anyone I can ask. Like there's not a lot of people who can help me, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, some people do try to help me and I'm so grateful for it. You know, like my thank you page is full. It's stuffed with names. And I even, you know, like just put the people up there who just like my stuff, even that, because I'm like, they should be called out too, you know, because of them, like they gave me the fire to just continue going. Because if nobody's liking your stuff, then it also hurts, you know, for us as creators, because it feels like we're not doing anything that's worth it, kind of.
Yeah.
So it's really stupid, but somehow, you know, like the likes matter, the comments matter even more. So I wish that more people would understand, you know, how important engagement is, because it really, really gives you that fire to continue going.
Yeah, well, it just makes such a difference in the, in, you know, where it's seen, how it's seen. Like we were talking earlier, the algorithm is such a crazy monster these days that, like, you know, like I, you know, come from doing stand-up comedy for a living, and I've been doing it for so long, and I told people all the time, I'm like, listen, if all you, like, just every other comedian's thing that comes across your page, just like it and put a comment. Like, do you know, if we all did that for each
right.
other, do you know what a yeah. difference it would make in promotion for everyone?
Yes, you know? Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is why I really try to engage all the time. Every time I see a post come by of someone I know, and I know that they're working on something, I always comment, you know, because I just know how much it means to that person.
Yeah.
You've probably seen me do it a lot.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, it is such a big, you know, and I try to also. It's just so hard. Like, people, it's funny because a lot of, you know, I've come across a lot of creators, whether in this industry or comedy or things I've done before that, where people get really, like, weird about the, it's almost like they feel like if they give you something, it takes away from anything they could have, you know, like if they give you props, or if they try to do something to help you, even if it's just a comment, then it's like, or it's like, you know, people are have like a weird jealousy, like, wow, well, my thing's not doing what I want to do, so I'm not going to say anything nice about this. And, you know,
I'm not sure if it's necessarily negative. Maybe it's also just because, you know, like they have so much going on their feed that they sometimes don't even see it anymore. Mm. Because I had someone that won something on my channel, and I brought it to his house because he lives nearby. And I asked him, like, oh, did you see all my stuff, you know, blah, blah. Because I know, like, normally he would engage, but yeah. Now I saw no engagement, you know. So then he said, like, I didn't see anything, you know, like, I didn't know anything about anything. So I was like, oh, okay, that's weird, you know. So then when I told him, he started looking at my page, and then he started liking all the stuff, and I was like, oh, you know, like, he didn't see it. So maybe it just doesn't pop up on someone's feed, like someone that you're actually connecting with in real life, for example, or someone that you know will like your stuff, because Facebook's just, you know, blocking it, or Instagram or whatever.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, it just ends up with the wrong people who are not engaging with your content or whatever. Or maybe it's just that, you know, like, people are tired or whatever, and they just, you know, scroll and scroll, and then they don't really do anything. Yeah. Sometimes, yeah. I mean, whenever I'm looking at people's content that I'm not friends with, for example, so it's new content kind of, then sometimes I think it's funny, and then I click on the person, and then I watch a couple of videos, but then at some point I also forget to like or comment or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, you know, like, I should do that, because otherwise it may seem like I'm just, you know, like, checking everything out, but I'm not liking it or
moving
whatever
on.
yeah
Well, what about the culture of, you know, the comic book creators in the Netherlands? Because, I mean, obviously the Netherlands is like a much smaller country than America, and I don't know how big of the comic book culture is there, but I mean, you know, there's, I know comic book creators across the country. I run into them at conventions. I've got local comic book creator friends, and, you know, or people I see regularly. What's the industry like for indie creators in the Netherlands, or in, you know, I mean, in your region even, because I know travel between countries can be so much easier for you guys in Europe. Is there like a camaraderie? Is there like people helping each other? You know, how does it work?
I actually think there's a lot of camaraderie. I mean, there's some bad blood between people, of course, like it always happens.
Yeah.
But I think generally there's a lot of camaraderie. I mean, if I look at myself, for example, like, I mean, like I told you, I worked for many people in the industry. So whenever, you know, like, I ask or I tell people that I am trying to sell my comic book and I don't have like a place to sell my book at an event, for example, they'll be like, oh, hey, but you can join us. You can come and sell it here. You know, like, you can just, be here and then you don't have to worry about anything, you know, and I'll know they'll take care of me, which is really good because it's also something I really need. And then, like, I can just, you know, sell my book there for free. And then I also offer something in exchange, you know, like, okay, I'll help, you know, with the sales, or maybe I can help other people pick out comic books at your, like, part, you know, like, too. So, yeah, like, I try to do that as well. And then they really want to help me. And I'm so grateful for it. Yeah. So, and I also found someone that I'm going to share like a table with at an event so we can split the costs, you know, like stuff like that.
Yeah, that's great. You know, it is helpful when you can find other people in the, you know, in the region that are, you know, kind of buddy up with the, what about the culture of like comic books in the Netherlands as a whole? You know, like when I was growing up in America, there was a stigma around it, you know, like a, it was like nerdy or geeky, or like, it was like you were, people didn't, you didn't, it was like almost like a secret, like you didn't tell people you read comic books, you know. Is it like that over there, or was it growing up?
Well, that depends on the country. Like here in the Netherlands, it's seen as a nerd thing. So I mean, the people still don't care, you know, like Dutch people are pretty down to earth. So they're like, yeah, I like what I like. You know, if you don't like me because of what I like, then that's your problem, not mine. So kind of like that. But yeah, I mean, of course, there are some people who are ashamed of it because, of course, like everyone is still different, you know, even though maybe most of the people are like that. You know, there will be some people who aren't.
Yeah.
And who maybe, you know, like try to kind of hide it. Or have tried it in the past, you know, but then have given up because they became older and they're like, yeah, why should I still care what other people think? So the thing is that in France, for example, and in Belgium, somehow the comics are perceived very differently. And the people are actually see it more as an art form, like in Japan, for example. Mm. So they are more accepting, like acceptance of the fact that people read those books. And they also have like very different ones. Like for example, in France, they have like a lot of, well, they have lots of books about, I don't know, like the Roman Empire and stuff like that, you know, like more the ancient kind of stories. And they have such, well, beautiful artwork. And it's very different from some of the, yeah, Dutch or Belgium comics that are mainly funny, you know, or more cartoony. But in Belgium, they have both. So, and in the Netherlands, like, we also have both, but we also do have, like, a lot of the cartoony stuff that was really famous, like, back in the days. Mm-hmm. Now it's kind of changing because I think the audience is changing as well. So there's more, like, there are more people who read manga nowadays in my country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that is really famous here. But then, yeah, like for us comic people, it's a little bit more difficult because there are just not that many people into it. So we have to work really hard to get those people out here to buy our books. So which is why, you know, like I want to sell 1,000 books. That's what I promised myself, that I have to do it and I need to do it. So I at least need to sell 1,000. Now, I can sell globally. So I mean, I shouldn't see why I wouldn't be able to sell 1,000 books. I mean, if you look at all the people in the world, there are billions of people in the world. It's not possible that I cannot find 1,000 people who want to buy my book.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you just got to find them.
Yeah, right. It's not a matter of are they there, but how can I reach them? How can I find them? So that's like the only problem I'm running into. But yeah, other than that, I have faith, you know, I'm sure I can do it.
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's see. Okay. We've got, running out of time here. I've got to get some lunch in me and get a couple more things done. But Felisa, tell people where they can find the book, where they can find you, where they can find Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff to follow, purchase, because they still have time to get on the Kickstarter. It goes through the when does it end?
In 11 days, okay. So somewhere in November. But even if it ends, I'm not going to end the sales just like straight away, because I still want people to be able to buy my book in other countries. So I think it's good to just leave it there, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, for me, it's not a problem. I can just go to the post office and send it. So it's fine. And then, of course, like, they can find me on Instagram. They can find me on Sirens of Blood and Water or Furichan7. Then I'm also on TikTok, and I just created the Sirens of Blood and Water page. And I also have my own personal account, which is Furichan7 as well. And then I also have Facebook. So I also have a Sirens of Blood and Water page. I have Comics with Furi page, and I have my own personal page. But yeah, I mean, you can follow it because I also post all the stuff like everywhere. And I just created a Discord server. I'm not sure like how I can tell you to find it, because I think it's just based on my name. So then
yeah, I don't know.
Probably also be Furichan, I think. Yeah, because I lived in Japan and they can't pronounce my name, you know, because I'm called Felisa, so they would say Furisa. And then, Furisa in short became Furi, you know?
Yeah.
So it's Furi, yeah?
Okay.
And then that's how people can find me. The Chan, of course, is like what they call you whenever they are calling you. Like, if I would have to call you because, I don't know actually how old you were, but, like, if we are about the same age, like, I could just call you Kun, like, right? So I would say, "Dis Kun," you know? So you would call me Felisa-chan, you know?
Oh, okay. Is that's all, that's in the Japanese?
Yeah, because it's
slang?
Like saying ma'am or madam or lady.
Got
or,
it. Okay.
You know, like, but in a polite way. So that's how I got that name, because I lived in Japan for 7 months and I had the time of my life. And I just want to go back, you know, and I wanted to stay there for the rest of my life, but I had to come back.
Why'd you have to come back?
Yeah, because I had to finish my education. I went there, when I studied at university. So but when I was there, I really didn't want to come back to the Netherlands. No, I wanted to stay because Japan made so much more sense to me.
You can always go back.
Yeah, well, I might one day.
All right. Felisa, we appreciate you hanging out. Always good to see you. Guys, check out the book, support the book, get the Kickstarter. There's more issues coming, and then I'm sure more coming after that. So go to Sirens of Blood and Water, give her a follow. We'll drop some links in the show description. And that's it. Anything else before we get out of here today?
Well, I think that's it. I just hope that people will love my story, because, of course, like, the only thing I want is for people to read it. I mean, I don't care about the money. I just want to make issue 2. That's the only reason why I, you know, like, want to sell enough books. But other than that, you know, like, I just really, really hope that people will love it.
There you go. All right, guys. Well, check it out. Again, we'll drop some links in the show description, all that, so you can find it. And that's it for this week. Find me in Houston at the IndieCon, guys. This weekend, I will be there. And that's it for the Socialer, Ivan Deese, and for Felisa. Thank you all very much. And we will see you all next week.